I remembered what Halfborn had told me about not liking to go backward, not revisiting his past. I wondered if he felt guilty about leaving his mom, or disappointed that the Skalds hadn't made him a great hero. Or maybe they had sung about his deeds. From what I'd seen, fame rarely lasted longer than a few years, much less centuries. Some in Herr Yaren Valhalla got bitter when they realized nobody born after the Middle Ages had a clue as to who they were. "You're famous to us," I offered. Halfborn grunted. "I could ask Jack to write a song about you."
"Gods forbid!"
His brow remained furrowed, but his mustache quirked like he was trying not to smile.
"Enough of that. We'll be docking soon. Keen, Fiero, stop gawking at the scenery and help. Trim the sail. Ready the mooring lines."
"We're not your pirate wenches, Gunderson,"
Mallory grumbled. But she and Alex did as he asked. We rounded a curve, and again I caught my breath. At the end of the fjord, a narrow valley split the mountains. Layer upon layer of green hills and forests zigzagging into the distance like an infinite reflection. At the rocky shore, shadowed by cliffs, a few dozen red, ochre, and blue houses clustered together as if for protection. Parked at the dock was a giant white cruise ship bigger than the entire town, a 20-story floating hotel.
"Well, that wasn't here before," Halfborn grumbled.
"Tourists," Mallory said. "What do you think, TJ? Are they exciting enough for you to fight?"
TJ tilted his head as if considering the idea. I decided it might be a good time to refocus the conversation. "So back in York," I said, "Hrungnir told us to take the train in Flom. Then we'd find what we were looking for. Anybody see a train?" TJ frowned. "How could anybody lay tracks across terrain like that?" It did seem improbable. Then I glanced off our port side. A car zipped along the base of a cliff. It made a hairpin turn and disappeared into a tunnel, straight through the side of the mountain. If Norwegians were crazy enough to build and drive on highways like that, maybe they were crazy enough to lay train tracks the same way.
"Let's go ashore and find out," Alex suggested. "I recommend we dock as far as possible from that cruise ship."
"You don't like tourists?" Sam asked.
"That's not it," said Alex. "I'm afraid they'll notice this bright yellow Viking boat and think we're a local attraction." "You want to give rides around the fjord all day?"
Sam shuddered.
"Good point."
We slipped into the dock farthest from the cruise ship. Our only neighbors were a couple of fishing boats and a jet ski with the dubious name Odin II painted on the side. I considered one Odin quite enough. I wasn't anxious for a sequel. As Mallory and Alex tied the mooring lines, I scanned the town of Flom. It was small, yes, but more convoluted than it had appeared from a distance. Streets wound up and down hills, through pockets of houses and shops, stretching out about half a mile along the shore of the fjord. I would have thought a train station would be easy to spot, but I didn't see one from the dock.
"We could split up," Mallory suggested. "Cover more ground that way."
I frowned. That never works in horror movies.
"Then you can come with me, Magnus," Mallory said. "I'll keep you safe."
She frowned at Halfborn Gunderson.
"But I refuse to be stuck with this lout again. Samira, you're useful in a pinch. How about it?"
The invitation seemed to surprise Sam. Although Mallory had been treating her with a lot more deference since the incident with the water horses.
Sure.
Halfborn scowled.
"Fine by me. I'll take Alex and TJ."
Mallory arched her eyebrows.
"You're going ashore? I thought you wouldn't set foot."
"Well, you thought wrong."
He blinked twice, as if he'd surprised himself.
This isn't my home anymore. Just a random tourist stop. What does it matter?
He sounded less than certain. I wondered if it would be helpful to offer to switch up the teams. Mallory had a gift for distracting Halfborn. I would have been willing to trade her for, I don't know, Alex, maybe. But I didn't think the offer would be appreciated by anybody else.
What about Hearthstone and Blitz? I said. Shouldn't I wake them up?
Good luck with that, Alex said. They are out.
Could you fold up the ship with them inside?
TJ asked.
Doesn't sound safe, I said. They could wake up and find themselves stuck in a handkerchief.
Ah, leave them here, Halfborn said. They'll be fine. This place was never dangerous. Unless it bored you to death.
I'll leave them a note, Sam volunteered. How about we scout around for half an hour? We'll meet back here. Then, assuming somebody's found the train, we can all go there together.
We agreed that plan had a low possibility of violent death. A few minutes later, Halfborn, TJ, and Alex headed off in one direction, while Mallory, Sam, and I headed the other way, wandering the streets of Flom to find a train and some interesting enemies to kill.
Chapter 30 Flom, Bomb, Thank You, Mom.
An old lady was not what I had in mind. We walked about 3 blocks through crowds of tourists, past shops selling chocolate and moose sausage and little wooden troll souvenirs. You would think anybody descended from Vikings would know better than to create more trolls. As we passed a small grocery store, Mallory grabbed my arm with enough force to leave a bruise.
It's her!
She spat the word like a mouthful of poison.
Who? Sam asked. Where?
Mallory pointed to a store called Knit Pickers, where tourists were oohing and aahing over a sidewalk display of locally produced wool yarn. Norway offered something for everyone.
The lady in white,
Mallory said. I spotted the one she meant. In the midst of the crowd stood an old woman with rounded shoulders and a hunched back. Her head craned forward like it was trying to get away from her body. Her white knit sweater was so fuzzy it might have been cotton candy. And cocked on her head was a matching floppy hat that made it hard to see her face. Dangling from one arm was a bag stuffed with yarn and knitting needles. I didn't understand what had attracted Mallory's attention. I could easily have picked out 10 other folks from the cruise ship who looked stranger. Then the old lady glanced in our direction. Her cloudy white eyes seemed to pierce right through me, as if she'd ninja-chucked her knitting needles into my chest. The crowd of tourists shifted, engulfing her, and the feeling passed. I gulped.
Who was...
Come on, Mallory said. We can't lose her.
She dashed toward the knitting store. Samira and I exchanged a worried look, then followed. A senior citizen dressed in cotton candy shouldn't have been able to hobble very fast, but the lady was already 2 blocks away when we got to Knit Pickers. We ran after her, dodging tour groups, bicyclists, and guys carrying kayaks. Mallory didn't wait for us. By the time Sam and I caught up, she was clinging to a chain-link fence outside a small train depot, cursing as she scanned for her lost prey.
You found the train, I noted.
Parked at the platform were 6 brightly painted old-fashioned rail cars. Tourists were piling on board. The tracks wound from the station and up the hills into the ravine beyond.
Where is she?
Mallory muttered.
Who is she?
Asked Sam.
There!
Mallory pointed to the last car, where the cotton candy grandma was just getting on board.
We need tickets, Mallory barked. Quickly!
We should get the others, Sam said. We told them we'd rendezvous.
No time!
Mallory nearly mugged Sam for her Norwegian kroner, currency provided, of course, by the ever-resourceful Alex. With much cursing and hand-waving, Mallory managed to purchase 3 tickets from the station attendant. Then we bolted through the turnstile and made it aboard the last car just as the doors were closing. The cabin was hot, stuffy, and packed with tourists. As the train rattled up the hillside, I felt queasier than I had since, well, the day before, roasting that dragonheart in Alfheim. It didn't help that I would occasionally catch snippets of bird chatter from outside. Conversations I could still understand, mostly about where one could find the juiciest worms and bugs.
"Okay, Mallory, explain," Sam demanded. "Why are we following this old lady?"
Mallory slowly made her way up the aisle, checking the faces of the passengers.
"She's the woman who got me killed. She's Loki."
Sam almost fell into an old man's lap.
"What?"
Mallory gave her the quick version of what she'd told me a few days ago, how she'd set a car bomb, then regretted it, then gotten a visit from an old woman who convinced her to go back and disarm the bomb using a couple of super useful daggers that turned out to be super useless. And then, kaboom.
"But Loki?" Sam asked. "Are you sure?"
I understood the anxiety in Sam's voice. She'd been training to fight her dad, but she hadn't expected it to happen here, today. Fighting Loki was not a class in which you wanted a pop quiz.
"Who else could it be?" Mallory scowled. "She's not here. Let's try the next car."
"And if we catch him?" I asked. "Or her?" Mallory unsheathed one of her knives.
"I told you. That lady got me killed. I intend to return her daggers, points first."
In the next car, tourists pressed against the windows, taking pictures of ravines, waterfalls, and quaint villages. Squares of farmland quilted the valley floor. Mountains cast shadows as sharp as sundial needles. Every time the train rounded a bend, the view seemed more scenic than before. Samira and I kept stopping, dumbfounded by the scenery outside, but Mallory had no interest in pretty stuff. The old lady wasn't in the second car, so we moved on. In the next car, halfway up the aisle, Mallory froze. The last 2 rows on the right were arranged in a sort of conversation nook, with 3 backward-facing seats and 3 that faced forward. The rest of the cabin was jammed with people, but that little nook was empty except for the old lady. She sat facing our direction, humming as she knit, paying no attention to the scenery or to us. A low growl started in Mallory's throat.
"Hold on." Sam grabbed her wrist. "There are a lot of mortals on this train. Can we at least confirm that this lady is Loki before we start killing and destroying?"
If I had tried to make that argument, I imagined Mallory would have hilt-bashed me in the groin. Since it was Sam asking, Mallory sheathed her dagger.
"Fine," she snapped. "We'll try to talk to her first. Then I'll kill her. Happy?"
"Delirious," Sam said. That didn't describe my mood. Jumpy and confuzzled came closer. But I followed the girls as they approached the old lady in white. Without looking up from her knitting, she said,
"Hello, my dears. Please sit."
Her voice surprised me. It sounded young and beautiful, like a radio announcer on a wartime propaganda station trying to convince enemy soldiers she was on their side. Norway Nancy, maybe. Or Flom Flo. Her face was hard to see, and not just because of the floppy hat. Her features glowed with a white light as fuzzy as her sweater. She seemed to be every age at once. A little girl, a teenager, a young lady, an old grandmother. All the faces existing in the present like the layers of a transparent onion. Maybe she hadn't been able to decide which glamour to wear today, so she'd just worn them all. I glanced at my friends. We took a silent vote. Sit? I asked. Kill? Mallory asked. Sit, Sam ordered. We edged into the three seats across from the old lady. I kept one eye on her knitting needles, waiting for her to bust out some dual-wielding moves, but she just kept working on her fuzzy white yarn, making what looked like a cotton candy scarf.
Well? Mallory snapped. What do you want?
The old lady clucked disapprovingly.
My dear, is that any way to treat me? I should treat you worse, Loki,
Mallory growled.
You got me killed.
Mallory, Sam said, this isn't Loki.
The relief was obvious in her voice. I wasn't sure how Sam knew, but I hoped she was right. There wasn't room in this train car to wield a blazing spear of light or a singing broadsword. Mallory's face mottled red.
What do you mean, not Loki?
Mallory Audrey Keene,
the old woman chided.
Did you really think, for all these years, I was Loki? For shame. Few beings in the Nine Worlds hate Loki as much as I do.
I considered that good news, but when I met Sam's eyes, I could tell she had the same question I did. Audrey? Mallory shifted, her hands on the hilts of her daggers like she was a downhill skier approaching a difficult jump.
You were there in Belfast, she insisted. In 1972. You gave me these useless knives, said I should run back and disarm the bomb on that school bus.
Sam caught her breath.
School bus? You targeted a school bus?
Mallory did her best to avoid our eyes. Her face was the color of cherry juice.
Don't be too hard on her, said the old lady. She was told the bus would be full of soldiers, not children. It was July 21st. The Irish Republican Army was planting bombs all across Belfast against the British. Retaliation for retaliation, as it usually goes. Mallory's friends wanted in on the action.
Two of my friends had been shot by the police the month before,
Mallory murmured.
They were 15 and 16. I wanted revenge.
She glanced up.
But Loki was one of the lads in our gang that day. He must have been. I've heard his voice since then, taunting me in dreams. I know how his power can tug.
Oh, yes,
the old lady continued to knit.
And do you hear his voice right now?
Mallory blinked.
I suppose not.
The old lady smiled.
You're correct, my dear. Loki was there that Friday in July, disguised as one of you, egging you on to see how much mischief he could create. You were the angriest of the bunch, Mallory. The doer, not the talker. He knew just how to manipulate you.
Mallory stared at the floorboards. She swayed with the rattling of the train. Behind us, tourists gasped with delight every time a new vista came into view.
Ma'am?
I didn't usually insert myself into conversations with creepy, godly ladies, but I felt bad for Mallory. No matter what she'd done in her past, she seemed to be shrinking under the woman's words. I remembered that feeling well from my most recent dream about Loki.
If you're not Loki, I said, which is great, by the way, then who are you?
Mallory said you were there, too, the day she died. After she set the bomb, you appeared and told her... The intensity of the woman's gaze pinned me to my seat. Within her white irises, gold pupils glowed like tiny suns.
I told Mallory what she already suspected, the woman said. That the bus would be full of children, and that she had been used. I encouraged her to follow her conscience,
You got me killed, Mallory said.
I urged you to become a hero, the woman said calmly. And you did.
Around 20 other bombs went off in Belfast on July 21st, 1972. It became known as Bloody Friday. How much worse would it have been if you hadn't acted?
Mallory scowled.
But the knives
were my gifts to you, said the woman, so that you would die with blades in your hands and go to Valhalla. I suspected they would be useful to you someday, but...
Someday? Mallory demanded.
You might have mentioned that part before I got myself blown up, trying to cut bomb wires with them.
The woman's frown seemed to ripple outward through her layers of ages. The little girl, the young woman, the crone.
My powers of prophecy are short range, Mallory. I can only see what will happen within 24 hours, give or take. That's why I'm here. You will need those knives. Today.
Sam sat forward.
You mean to help us retrieve Cavassier's mead?
The woman nodded.
You have good instincts, Samira al-Abbas. The knives...
Why should we listen to you?
Mallory blurted out.
Whatever you tell us to do, it'll probably get us killed.
The woman laid her knitting needles across her lap.
My dear, I am the goddess of foresight and the immediate future. I would never tell you what to do. I am only here to give you the information you need to make a good choice. As to why you should listen to me, I hope you would do so because I love you.
Love me?
Mallory looked at us in disbelief, like, are you hearing this?
Old woman, I don't even know who you are.
Of course you do, dear.
The woman's form shimmered. Before us sat a middle-aged woman of regal beauty, her long hair the same color as Mallory's, plaited down both shoulders. Her hat became a war helm of white metal, glowing and flickering like trapped neon gas. Her white dress seemed made of the same stuff, only woven into gentle folds. In her knitting bag, her fuzzy yarn had become swirling puffs of mist. The goddess, I realized, had been knitting with clouds.
I am Frigg, she said. Queen of the Aesir. And I am your mother, Mallory Keen.
Chapter 31. Mallory Gets Nuts. You know how it goes. You're minding your own business, taking a train up a ravine in the middle of Norway, when an old lady with a bag of knitting supplies introduces herself as your godly mother. If I had a crone for every time that happened. When Frigg broke the news, the train screeched to a stop as if the locomotive itself were asking,
"Say what?"
Over the intercom, an announcement crackled in English. Something about a photo opportunity with a waterfall. I didn't know why that rated a stop, since we'd already passed about 100 scenic waterfalls. But all the tourists got up and piled out of the car until we were alone. Just Sam, Mallory, me, and the Queen of the Universe. Mallory had been frozen for a good 20 seconds. When the aisle was clear, she shot to her feet, marched to the end of the car and back again, then shouted at Frigg,
"You don't just announce something like that out of nowhere!"
Yelling at a goddess isn't generally a good idea. You run the risk of getting impaled, zapped, or eaten by giant house cats. It's a Freya thing. Don't ask. Frigg didn't seem bothered, though. Her calmness made me question how she could be related to Mallory. Now that Frigg's appearance had resolved into one clear image, I saw faint scars under her white and gold eyes.
scoring her cheeks like the tracks of tears. On an otherwise divinely perfect face, the streaks were jarring, especially since they reminded me of another goddess with similar scars. Sigun, the strange silent wife of Loki.
"Mallory," Frigg said. "Daughter. Don't call me that. You already know it is true. You've had suspicions for years."
Samira gulped, as if she'd forgotten how to swallow for the past few minutes.
"Wait. You are Frigg. Wife of Odin. Mrs. Odin. The Frigg."
The goddess chuckled.
"As far as I know, dear, I'm the only Frigg. It's not a very popular name. But nobody ever sees you."
Sam patted her clothes like she was looking for an autograph pen.
"I mean, never. I don't know a single Valkyrie or an Heri who has ever met you. And Mallory is your daughter?"
Mallory threw her hands in the air.
"Will you stop fangirling, Valkyrie? But don't you see? Another deadbeat parent? Yeah, I do."
Keen scowled at the goddess.
"If you're my ma, you're no better than my da." "Oh, child."
Frigg's voice turned heavy.
"Your father wasn't always as broken as when you knew him. I'm sorry you never got to see him the way I did, before the drinking and the rage. Wouldn't that have been peachy?"
Mallory blinked her red-tinged eyes.
"But since you apologized, I suppose all's forgiven." "Mallory," Sam chided, "how can you be so callous? This is your mom. Frigg is your mom." "Right. I heard." "But..."
Sam shook her head.
"But that's good. I'll be the judge of that."
Mallory plopped back into her seat. She crossed her arms and glared at the clouds in her mother's knitting bag. I tried to see similarities between mother and daughter. Beyond the red hair, I couldn't. Frigg wrapped herself in gentle white clouds. She radiated calm, cool, and melancholy. Mallory was more like a dust devil, all agitation and fury. Despite the goddess's war helm, I couldn't imagine Frigg dual-wielding knives any more than I could imagine Mallory sitting quietly, knitting a cloud scarf. I understood why Mallory was angry, but I also got the wistful yearning in Samira's voice. Sam and I had both lost our moms. We would have given anything to have them back. Gaining a mom, even one who had waited 50-odd years to reveal herself, that wasn't something to throw away lightly. From the left side of the train, music drifted in through the open windows. Somewhere, a woman was singing. Frigg turned her ear toward the sound.
"Ah, that's just a mortal singer performing for the tourists. She's pretending to be a spirit of the waterfall. She's not a real Nauk."
I shuddered. "Good."
"Indeed," Frigg said. "You have quite enough on your plate today with the giant's thralls."
Sam leaned forward. "Giant's thralls? As in slaves?"
"I'm afraid so," Frigg said. "The thralls of the giant Baugi guard the mead. To defeat them, you will need the stone in my daughter's pocket."
Mallory's hand moved to the side of her jacket. I'd forgotten she was carrying the whetstone. Apparently she had, too.
"I don't like the idea of fighting slaves," Mallory said. "I also don't like you calling me daughter. You haven't earned the right. Not yet. Maybe not ever."
On Frigg's cheeks, the tear scars glistened like veins of silver.
"Mallory, ever is a very long time. I've learned not to try seeing that far into the future. Whenever I attempt it..."
She sighed.
"Always tragedy. Like what happened to my poor son Balder."
Balder, I thought. Which one was Baldur? Dealing with the Norse gods, I really needed a program with glossy color pictures of all the players, along with their season stats. He died? I guessed. Sam elbowed me, though I thought it was a perfectly legitimate question.
He was the most handsome of the gods, Sam explained. Frigg had a dream that he would die. And so I tried to prevent it.
Frigg picked up her needles. She knitted a stitch of cloud vapor.
I exacted promises from everything in the nine worlds not to harm my son. Each type of stone, each type of metal, salt water, fresh water, air, even fire. Fire was hard to convince, but there are many, many things in the nine worlds. Toward the end, I'll admit, I got tired and absent-minded. I neglected one tiny plant, mistletoe. When I realized my oversight, I thought, oh well, it doesn't matter. Mistletoe is much too small and insignificant to hurt Baldur. Then, of course, Loki found out.
I remember this part, Mallory said, still glaring at the bag of clouds.
Loki tricked a blind god into killing Baldur with a mistletoe dart. Which means Loki murdered my brother.
She tasted the word, trying it out. From her expression, I guessed she didn't like it.
So, Ma, do you fail all your children spectacularly? Is that a thing with you?
Frigg frowned, and a hint of storm darkened her cloud-white irises. I wished the seats were wider so I could scoot away from Mallory.
The death of Baldur was a hard lesson, said the goddess. I learned that even I, Queen of the Aesir, have limits. If I concentrate, I can glean the destiny of any living thing. I can even manipulate their weird to some extent. But only in the short term, 24 hours, sometimes less. If I try to look beyond that, to shape someone's long-term fate...
She separated her needles. Her knitting unraveled into wisps of smoke.
You may hate me, Mallory, Frigg said. But it is too painful for me to visit my children, to see what will befall them and not be able to change it. That is why I only appear in times when I know I can make a difference. Today, for you, is one of those times.
Mallory seemed to be struggling internally, her anger battling her curiosity.
All right, I'll bite, she relented. What's my future?
Frigg pointed out the window on our right. My vision telescoped, zooming across the valley. If I hadn't been sitting down, I would have fallen. I guessed Frigg was enhancing my sight, giving me Heimdall-level clarity for just a moment. At the base of a mountain, a waterfall split against a granite promontory as if it were the prow of a ship. In the center of the rock, between twin white curtains of water, stood a massive set of iron doors. And spread out before those doors, on a strip of land between the two rivers, was a field of ripe wheat. 9 burly men, wearing only iron neck collars and loincloths, worked the field, swinging their scythes like a squadron of grim reapers. My vision snapped back to normal. Looking across the valley, I could now just make out the spot where the waterfall split on the rock, maybe 10 miles away.
That is the place, Frigg said. And there is the path you must use to reach it.
She pointed to the base of the railroad tracks. Just out the window, a streak of rubble zigzagged down the side of the cliff. Calling it a path was generous. I would have called it a landslide.
Today, Mallory, the goddess announced, you will need those daggers, and your wits. You are the key to retrieving Kvasir's mead.
Mallory and Sam both looked queasy. I guessed they'd also gotten a free trial of Heimdall vision.
I don't suppose you could be any vaguer?
Mallory asked. Frigg gave her a sad smile.
You have your father's fierce spirit, my dear. I hope you can master it and use it, as he could not. You have everything you need to retrieve the mead. But there is one last gift I can give you. Something that will help you when you finally face Loki. As I learned when I underestimated Mistletoe, even the smallest thing can make a vast difference.
She reached into her knitting bag and pulled out a small, wrinkled brown orb. A chestnut? Walnut? One of those big nuts. She pulled apart the two halves, showing that the shell was empty, then fit them back together.
If Magnus defeats Loki in the Flighting, you will have to imprison the trickster in this shell.
Wait, if? I asked. Can't you see my future? The goddess fixed me with her strange white gaze.
The future is a brittle thing, Magnus Chase. Sometimes merely revealing someone's destiny can cause that destiny to shatter.
I gulped. I felt like a high-pitched tone was reverberating through my bones, ready to crack them like glass. Okay. Let's not shatter anything, then.
If you defeat Loki,
Frigg continued,
bring him back to the Aesir, and we will deal with him.
From the tone of Frigg's voice, I doubted the Aesir planned on throwing Loki a welcome back party. She threw the nut. Mallory caught it in her fingertips.
Bit small for a god, isn't it? It won't be if Magnus succeeds,
Frigg said.
The ship Naglfar has not yet sailed. You have at least 24 hours, perhaps even 48. After that...
Blood roared in my ears. I didn't see how we could do everything we needed to do in a day, or even two. I definitely didn't see how I could insult Loki down to the size of a walnut. The train's whistle blew, a plaintive sound like a bird calling for its dead mate. And you can trust me on that, because I understood bird calls. Tourists began piling back onto the train.
I must go, Frigg said. And so must you. You just got here.
Mallory's scowl deepened. Her expression hardened.
But fine. Whatever. Leave. Oh, my dear.
Frigg's eyes misted over, the light dimming in her golden pupils.
I am never far, even if you do not see me. We will meet again.
A new tear trickled down the scarred path of her left cheek.
Until then, trust your friends. You are right. They are more important than any magic items. And whatever happens, whether you choose to believe me or not, I love you.
The goddess dissolved, knitting bag and all, leaving a sheen of condensation on the seat. The tourists piled back into the train car. Mallory stared at the moist impression left by her godly mother, as if hoping the water droplets might reconstitute into something that made sense. A target, an enemy, even a bomb. A mother who showed up out of nowhere and proclaimed, I love you. That was something no knives, no wits, no walnut shell could help her conquer. I wondered if I could say anything to make her feel better. I doubted it. Mallory was about action, not talk. Apparently, Sam reached the same conclusion.
We should go, she said. Before...
The train lurched into motion. Unfortunately, tourists were still shuffling to their seats, blocking the aisles. We'd never be able to muscle our way to the door before the train got back up to full speed, and left the mountainside trail far behind. Sam glanced at the open window on our right.
Another exit?
That's suicidal, I said.
That's typical,
Mallory corrected. She led the way, leaping out the window of the moving train. Chapter 32. Mallory also gets fruit. Don't get me wrong. If you're going to fall down the side of a mountain, Norway is a beautiful place to do it. We skidded past lovely creeks, bounced off majestic trees, fell from imposing cliffs, and tumbled through fields of fragrant wildflowers. Somewhere off to my left, Mallory Keane cursed in Gaelic. Somewhere behind me, Samira kept yelling,
"Magnus, take my hand! Magnus!"
I couldn't see her, so I couldn't comply. Nor did I understand why she wanted to hold hands as we fell to our demise. I shot from the side of a ridge, pinballed off a spruce, and finally rolled to a stop on a more level slope, my head coming to rest against something fuzzy and warm. Through a haze of pain, I found myself staring up at the brown and white face of a goat. "Otis?" I mumbled.
"Baa!"
said the goat. I could understand his meaning, not because he was Thor's talking goat Otis, but because regular goat bleats now made as much sense to me as bird chirps. He'd said, "No, stupid, I'm Theodore, and my belly is not a pillow." "Sorry," I mumbled. The goat got to his feet and capered off, depriving me of my comfy headrest. I sat up, groaning. I did a self-check and found nothing broken. Amazing. Frigg really knew how to suggest the safest trails to hurtle down at life-threatening speeds. Samira swooped down from the sky, her green hijab rippling around her face.
"Magnus, didn't you hear me calling? You didn't have to fall. I was going to fly you both down here."
"Ah." That awkward moment when you jump out a window because your friend jumped out a window. Then you remember that your other friend can fly. When you say it like that, it does make more sense. "Where's Mallory?"
"Kier!"
she shouted from somewhere nearby. I recognized the word. Gaelic for witch or hag, which I assumed Mallory was using as a term of endearment for her newly discovered maternal unit. In case you're curious, the word is pronounced ke, followed by clearing a large amount of mucus from your throat. Try it at home, kids. It's fun. Finally, I spotted Mallory. She had fused herself with a blackberry bush, her head wedged firmly between its two largest boughs, its thorny branches woven into her clothes. She was hanging upside down with her left arm bent at a strange angle. "Hold on!" I yelled, which in retrospect was dumb, since she obviously wasn't going anywhere. Sam and I managed to extricate her from her new fruit-bearing friend. Then I summoned the power of Frey and healed 1,000 small cuts and a fractured bone, though I couldn't do much about her wounded pride or her foul mood. "Better?" I asked. She spat a leaf from her mouth.
"Compared to 5 minutes ago? Yeah. Compared to this morning, when I didn't know that Kiach was my ma? Not so much."
She pulled the walnut from her pocket. It had left quite a bruise against her hip during her tumble down the mountain, but the shell itself was undamaged. Mallory seemed to take this as a personal affront. She stuck the nut in her jacket along with the whetstone, muttering various insults about the walnut's parentage. Sam reached out to pat Mallory's shoulder, then clearly thought better of it.
I know you're angry.
"Yeah?" Mallory snapped.
"What gave it away?"
"But Frigg," Sam said, as if the name alone was an entire persuasive essay with 3 examples per paragraph and a conclusion.
"You see the similarities, don't you?
Mallory flexed her healed arm.
What similarities would those be, Valkyrie? Choose your words carefully.
Sam ignored the threat. When she spoke, her voice was full of awe.
Frigg's the power behind the throne. Odin's the king, but he's always traveling. Frigg controls Asgard. She does it without anybody even noticing. You've heard the story about when Odin was exiled, right?
Sam looked at me for support. I had no clue what she was referring to, so I said, "Yep, absolutely." Sam pointed at me like, "See? Magnus knows what's up."
Odin's brothers, Vili and Ve, took over in his absence, she said. But to do so, they had to marry Frigg. Different kings, same queen. Asgard got along just fine, because Frigg was the one in charge.
Mallory frowned.
You're saying I'm like my ma because I'll hook up with anybody to get power? No.
Sam blushed.
I'm saying Frigg is always below the radar, never seen. But she is the cement that holds the Aesir together.
Mallory tapped her foot.
Now you're comparing me to easily ignored cement. I'm saying you're like your mother because you're the Frigg of Floor 19. TJ and Halfborn never would have become friends if you hadn't goaded them into it. They used to hate each other.
I blinked. They did?
True enough, Mallory muttered. When I arrived, ugh, they were insufferable. I mean, even more insufferable. Exactly, said Sam. You made them a team. Then, when Odin disguised himself as an Inherji, do you think it was an accident he chose to live on your floor? You're Frigg's chosen agent in Valhalla. The Allfather wanted to see what you were made of.
I hadn't thought about that for a while. When I first arrived in Valhalla, Odin had been slumming with us on Floor 19 disguised as X, the half-troll. X had liked dogs, was good in battle, and never said much. I liked Odin a lot better in that form.
Ha! Huh, Mallory grunted. You really believe that? I do,
Sam said.
And when Magnus came along, where did he end up? On your team. Same with Alex. Same with me.
Sam spread her hands.
So excuse me if I fangirled a little when I met Frigg, but she has always been my favorite Aesir. She's kind of like the anti-Loki. She keeps things together while Loki is trying to pick them apart. And knowing you're her daughter? Well, that makes perfect sense to me. I am even more honored to fight at your side.
More red splotches appeared on Mallory's face, but this time I didn't think they were from anger.
Well, Valkyrie, you've got your father's silver tongue. I don't see any reason to kill you for what you've said.
That was Mallory's way of saying thank you. Sam inclined her head.
Then let's find Kvasir's mead, shall we?
One more thing, I said, because I couldn't help myself. Mallory, if your middle name is Audrey, and your initials are M-A-K, she raised an index finger.
Don't say it, Beantown.
We are totally calling you Mac now. Mallory fumed.
My friends in Belfast used to call me that. Constantly.
That wasn't a no, so I decided we had permission. The next hour, we spent trekking across the valley floor. Sam tried to text Alex to let her know we were okay, but she couldn't get a signal. No doubt the Norse god of cell phone service had decreed, "Thou shalt have no bars," and was now laughing at our expense. We walked over a creaky wooden bridge spanning whitewater rapids. We navigated a pasture full of goats who were not Otis. We passed from frigid shadows into baking sunlight as we moved in and out of the woods. All the while, I did my best to tune out the voices of birds, squirrels, and goats, none of whom had anything good to say about us walking through their territory. Slowly, we made our way toward the split waterfall we'd seen from the train. Even in this colossal countryside, it was an easy landmark. We stopped once for lunch, consisting only of some trail mix Mallory happened to have, along with a few wild blackberries we picked, and water from a stream so cold it made my teeth hurt. Sam didn't join us, of course. She just did her noon prayers on a carpet of fluffy green grass. I'll say this about Ramadan. It cut down my impulse to whine. Whenever I started thinking I had it rough, I remembered that Samira was doing everything I was doing, but without food or water. We trekked up the other side of the valley, using the twin rivers from the waterfall as our guidelines. At last, as the falls loomed close, we heard harsh, rasping sounds coming from over the ridge in front of us. Whisk, whisk, whisk! Like metal files being scraped across bricks. I recalled the vision Frigg had shown us of 9 burly dudes with scythes. I thought, Magnus, if those guys are over that hill, you might want a plan. So, what exactly is a thrall? I asked my friends. Mallory wiped her brow. Our trip through the valley hadn't done her fair complexion any favors. She'd be suffering a bad case of sunburn if we lived through the day.
Like I said earlier, a thrall is a slave. The ones we're going to face, I'm pretty sure they're giants.
I tried to square that with what I knew about giants, which, granted, wasn't much. So, Jotuns enslave other Jotuns? Sam wrinkled her nose in distaste.
All the time. Humans gave up the practice centuries ago.
Some might dispute that, Mallory grumbled.
Fair point, Sam agreed. What I mean is, giants do it the way Vikings used to. Clans go to war against one another. They take prisoners of war and declare them personal property. Sometimes the thralls can earn their freedom, sometimes not. Depends on the master.
Then maybe we can free these guys, I suggested. Get them on our side. Mallory snorted.
Unbeatable guardians of the mead! Unless you offer them their freedom. In which case they're pushovers.
I'm just saying.
Won't that be easy, Beantown? Let's stop dreaming and start fighting.
She led the way over the hill, which struck me as only slightly less reckless than jumping out of a moving train. Chapter 33. We devise a horribly fabulous plan. So much for strategy. We popped over the ridge and found ourselves at the edge of a wheat field several acres across. The wheat grew taller than us, which would have made it perfect for sneaking through, except that the guys working the field were taller still. 9 giants, all swinging scythes. The setup reminded me of a video game level I'd played with TJ once, but I had no wish to try it with my actual body. Each thrall had an iron collar around his neck. Otherwise, they wore nothing but loincloths and a whole lot of muscles. Their bronze skin, shaggy hair, and beards all dripped with perspiration. Despite their size and strength, they seemed to be having a hard time cutting the wheat. The stalks just bent against their scythe blades with a whisking sound like laughter, then sprang back up again. Because of this, the thralls looked almost as miserable as they smelled, and they smelled like half-born Gunderson's sandals. Beyond the field loomed the wishbone-shaped waterfall. In the cliff face that jutted from the middle was a set of massive iron doors. Before you could say, "Darn it, Mallory," the nearest thrall, who had a mop of red hair even more impressive than Miss Keene's, sniffed the air, stood up straight, and turned to face us.
"Ho-ho!"
The other 8 stopped working and turned toward us as well, adding,
"Ho-ho! Ho-ho! Ho-ho!"
like a flock of strange birds.
"What have we here?"
asked the red-headed thrall.
What indeed?
Asked another with an impressively tattooed face.
What indeed?
Asked a third, maybe just in case we hadn't heard the tattooed guy.
Kill them?
Red pulled his buddies.
Yes, probably kill them,
Tattoo agreed.
Hold on,
I yelled, before they could take a vote, which I had a feeling would be unanimous.
We're here for a very important reason.
Which does not entail our deaths,
Sam added.
Good point, Sam.
I nodded vigorously, and the thralls all nodded along, apparently impressed by my earnestness.
Tell them why we're here, Mac.
Mallory gave me her standard, I'll kill you later with both knives look.
Well, Beantown, we're here to help these fine gentlemen.
The nearest thrall, Red, frowned at his scythe. Its curved iron blade was almost as corroded as Jack had been when I first pulled him out of the Charles River.
Don't know how you could help, Red said. Unless you could harvest the field for us. Master only gives us these dull blades.
The others muttered in agreement.
And the wheat stalks are as hard as flint,
said Tattoo.
Harder, said another thrall. And the wheat keeps growing back as soon as we cut it. We can only take a break when all the wheat is cut, but we can't ever finish.
Red nodded.
It's almost like,
his face darkened with effort,
like Master doesn't want us to ever take a break.
The others nodded, pondering this theory.
Ah, yes, your master,
Mallory said.
Who is your master again?
Boggy, said Red. Great Thane of the Stone Giants. He's off in the north getting ready for Doomsday.
He said this as if Boggy had just gone to the store to get some milk.
He is a hard master, Mallory noted.
Yes,
Tattoo agreed.
No, Red said.
The others chimed in.
No, no, not at all. Kind and good.
They glanced suspiciously from side to side, as if their master might be hiding in the wheat. Sam cleared her throat.
Does Boggy give you any other duties?
Oh, yes, said a thrall in the back. We guard the doors, so no one can take Suttung's mead or free Suttung's prisoner.
The prisoner? I asked.
Suttung?
9 thrall heads nodded solemnly. They would have made an excellent kindergarten class if the teacher could have found large enough coloring books and crayons.
Suttung is the master's brother, said Red. He owns the mead and the prisoner in the cave.
Another thrall shrieked.
You are not supposed to say what is in the cave! Right.
Red turned even redder.
Suttung owns the mead and the prisoner who may or may not be in the cave.
The other thralls nodded, apparently satisfied Red had thrown us off the scent.
If anyone tries to get past us, said Tattoo, we get to take a break from cutting wheat, just long enough to kill the trespassers. So, Red said, if you are not here to cut the wheat, then do we get to kill you? That would be helpful. We could use a good killing break. Killing break?
Asked a guy in the back.
Killing break, said another.
The rest took up the call. 9 giants shouting, killing break, tended to make me a little jumpy. I thought about pulling out Jack and having him cut the wheat for the thralls, but that would still leave us facing 9 big dudes who were under orders to kill trespassers. Jack might be able to slay 9 giants before they slew us, but I still didn't like the idea of chopping down thralls when I could be chopping down their masters.
What if we freed you? I asked. Just for the sake of argument. Would you turn on your master? Would you run away to your homeland?
The thralls got dreamy looks in their eyes.
We might do those things, Tattoo agreed.
And would you help us? Sam asked. Or even just leave us alone?